To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Welcome, everyone, to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction. What's up, everybody? You know that song, you know this voice. It's your boy, Rook. Joining me is the man who has to have his pancakes. It's Mr. Don Moore.
One time. I had them one time.
But it was a beautiful time. It was so funny. Joining us on the show today, welcome back, talking about Octobriana once again. Everybody, say hello to Stu Taylor.
Hey, everyone, and thank you for welcoming me back. It's obviously very encouraging. I didn't make a complete hash of it last time, so I feel privileged. Yeah. Thank you.
We loved the book last time, and, you know, now we've got Octobriana in the Underground, Full Tilt Boogie, number one. First off, this one's hitting the shelves through Diamond. Showing up. Everybody go to your local comic book shop. Start asking about it now. We got to read it. It's awesome. So yes. Let's start talking. Stu, what brought it into fruition? What got this out on the shelves? How was it?
That's a loaded question. Loaded questions there. So obviously when we spoke last time, I kind of gave you background on my history with the character of Octobriana, who, you know, just maybe we should give a very quick recap.
Sure.
Allow me to do the elevator pitch. So, Octobriana and the Underground was a book that came out in 71. It was like an art book with a couple of like excerpts from comic strips. And the story and the myth goes that these strips were created by an underground group of youth in what is now Czechoslovakia, which was part of the Soviet Union. And it was very anti-Soviet, anti-state. And these comic strips got smuggled out and picked up by a publisher in the UK and presented in this book. Of like, how amazing is this? These kids have kind of like, you know, stuck two fingers up at the system and put out these comics. How awesome, you know, and it inspired like David Bowie was into a movie. Billy Idol's got a tattoo of her. It's inspired, you know, other independent comic creators like myself. But, you know, the myth is just that. It was all what we like to call bullshit in the UK. And so basically the guy who published the book, or wrote the book rather, and made up this fanciful backstory, and really it was comic strips that were meant for a different purpose. It was a different character called Amazona, and this guy, Peter Sadecki, just drew a red star and created this backstory. And, you know, the myth, even now, even though we're actually out there saying, you know, for years that it's all, you know, fiction, is actually an art fraud, people still like to believe the kind of slightly sexier story of this sort of, you know, disaffected youth going against the system. So that's how Octobriana started. My take on her started in the 90s when I was my first independent comics. I collaborated with a colleague of mine called John Short, and we published our own 5-issue series. I then did another 2 issues after that. And then it brings us back around to when we first started talking at the end of 2021, when Octobriana with Love, which was my take on a 50th anniversary special, kind of brought all the disparate elements of the character and some unique takes, really, and basically setting up, you know, my interpretation of her, like taking the basis of the book, because there are only 2 strips, like I say, and partial strips at that, and lots of prose that this guy Sadecki had written about her origin. So with Octobriana with Love, we created a comic book origin, you know, in comic book form, set up a universe of characters. So you've got like our take on Rasputin, who's back from the dead. We've got Tarquin, the Scottish talking gorilla. And we've got Lucretia Hussain, who's like a YouTube vlogger, who's kind of, from my perspective, it's kind of like the reader's eyes and ears on Octobriana and this kind of weird motley crew. And so we kind of left things on a cliffhanger, slightly pretentiously, hoping we'll do some more. And we are very pretentious. And we're coming back now with Full Tilt Boogie, which is a 2-issue mini.
And it picks up right where Octobriana with Love left off, and gives a quick little recap for the reader, but then just goes right into the story, which I thought was fantastic. You've really got 2 stories in this book. both are fantastic. I love both of them. I want to talk for a second about the two-page spreads.
Yep.
The first storyline. Gorgeous, gorgeous work. You know, when you started, at what point did you know that the Underground was gonna definitely get published? After doing Octobriana with Love, you really wanted to keep going. What point from there did you know 100% that Octobriana and the Underground was gonna get published?
So I pretty much straight away, like, I'd already had the ideas for what is Full Tilt Boogie. Originally it was gonna be called Red Girl Summer. I can't remember why I changed the title, actually. We're using Red Girl Summer as some of the marketing plans. I think we changed the title because it was going to come out the end of last year. Well, the summer of last year, and then it kept slipping because of production things out of our control. And then it was like, well, we're just going to change the title and we'll go from there. But I think it was pretty much straight after. So the two-page intro is by Simon Fraser, who wrote the bookend strips from With Love. His time was very limited, so I managed to kind of twist his arm and get him to do like our prologue for this two-issue series, because he was busy doing, I think it was Judge Hershey for the 2000 AD series, Judge Dredd series.
Nice.
But, you know, I was fortunate enough to get N. Stephen Harris to come back and kind of do the main two-part story, which was written by myself. Involving a character called Mother Russia, which is kind of like the, you know.
I'm going to jump for a second.
The preview
for the next issue, the look of Mother Russia, how different she looks from first issue to second issue, that's wild. So I'm just, in the back of my head, I know that we've got something happening, but we'll get to that. We'll come back to that.
And I'm happy to talk about that. Actually, definitely. There's a deliberate thing with the fight in the first issue that people might be a bit, but it's kind of obvious what we're setting up. Honestly, ordered it out last summer. The main reason for the delay, it was just, I wanted to make sure that artists had enough time to do the stuff. It wasn't like me setting a deadline and saying, you have to hit this. I had deadlines. But it was just, I'd rather the work be as good as it could. And I think it's pretty worth addressing the elephant in the room, I would say, and it's the war of Ukraine. So, that did play a factor in me considering how to market this, because it's still, for a lot of people, she's still an unknown character. And even though she's like Russian, she isn't, you know, it's quite funny when you should have read the internet comments, right? But if you do, you know, you'll see people say she's pro-communist, which in some ways she is, but it's kind of like the pure form of communism, not what the Soviet Union China had done.
We publicly know as communism, it evolved into.
It's this kind of muddy thing where people mix up socialism with communism. It's all kind of like, some of them aspects are very different. And then there's others who go, well, you're pro-Putin. And it's like, well, how can you be this and this? And it's just like, so there is that kind of I was just aware it could be problematic, and you know, we had a few comments where people are a bit like, is this pro-Putin propaganda? And it's like, well, if you just honestly, if you open the front cover, you've got, you know, Simon's choice to have her with the Ukrainian flag was totally his call, and he suggested that. I thought about it and think, you know, well, no, cool, go for it. One of our variant cover for issue two by Rufus Daiglow and Soph Dodgson is a really cool action shot of her, you know, assault rifle machine gunning some bad guys off panel. But in the background, you've got some graffiti that was kind of written. And if anyone can read Russian, they can probably figure out what it is. And that was actually I think it came from a Ukrainian friend of the artist as well. So I wasn't someone who's going to go in and go, let's do this kind of messaging, but if it was more organic, if that makes sense, it kind of felt right. I think I held it back deliberately for a few months to see what would happen. As time went on, as the production went on, it was like, look, I think the only change I actually made, and it was pure coincidence, the strip that I wrote, which features Mother Russia, I'd written it, well, I think I'd written it when we last spoke, so it was the end of 2021, and it was set in the 1980s Ukraine. So I just created a fictional Eastern European country called Azerania, I think it's mentioned there. So, but and I was thinking about changing it back to Ukraine. I thought, no, it's just, I don't, it for me, it would confuse.
Yeah.
Give people the impression we're trying to say something we weren't. It's just part of the Soviet Union. And
yeah, that had to be some hard decision making on your part, you know, to
respectful, but not seeing that we're kind of glorifying or glamorizing or opportunistic as well. It wasn't that, you know, it was something that was in the works for a while, but it's also something we're mindful of and just being respectful.
One thing, when you're talking about this, I just want to say, one, I enjoyed this immensely. I enjoyed the last one. I enjoyed this one maybe a little more. It's hard to say. Yeah. But what I really enjoyed was her dialogue with Mother Russia. You know, it starts out with Mother, and I'm not giving it away because I want everybody to read this. Well, Mother Russia is fighting and saying all the stuff she's saying. It was Oktobriana's reply, which I have to admit, I got a pad of paper and wrote everything down she said. So, I mean, we're living in a world now where people make snap judgments, knee-jerk decisions, not even looking at the stuff or looking at the other person's side. And so I can see where this would be happening with the book. But if you read it, and you saw where she stood for him and what she was doing, it's a completely different animal. It's a fun comic book. It's a very interesting comic book, but it's very poetic.
Wow. So, well, I'm honored. I'm definitely come back on this podcast again then. I appreciate you saying that. But it's really nice to hear. Well, actually, as you were talking, I was thinking actually one thing about Oktobriana, it goes back to the original source, right? There was no Oktobriana comics. You know, it was a couple of salvage strips that someone had drawn over and then had written prose about what they were about. So really, if you look at the book, it's full of contradictions. It's like she's this pro-communist, but then she's not. And then it's like then she's this super sexy adventure heroine. It's all kind of, it's just a mess of contradictions. So what I try to do is, my interpretation of her is that she's not tied to one flag or one theme. So but my approach is that if someone feels differently, if they feel that she should be this or she should be that, then the fantastic thing about the characters, you can do that, you know, you can do your take on it. So very much I think the bit you're talking about as well, where she's talking about her interactions with Stalin. And that is actually something I'd written separately as a kind of a story on its own, but then it just ends up being a bit of dialogue between back and forth between her and Mother Russia. But because I had thought about, you know, what would she think of Stalin? It's pretty obvious she wouldn't be a fan, you know. So yeah. I quite like the idea of her being there at his final moments and then not being particularly glamorous, because they weren't glamorous for him. It's documented what, you know, how he was found.
It was, and you know, she doesn't say anything that's not untrue, you know, as far as how he behaved. Tell me a little bit about, because I'm very curious about the character Disturbia and the relationship between her and Baba Yaga, and the rest of the sisterhood. Are we going to get to see more of them?
Yes. I would say yes. If you're going to put me on the spot and say when, I'm like, ooh.
Tell me eventually.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure. And again, they were something, I'm trying to think if it ever went, when we did Oktobriana with Love and we did the Kickstarter campaign, we offered like a, it was like the first 7 pages. It was like a rough PDF kind of taster of it. And on the original scripting for that, there was a mention of the sisters of Orphan Barrow. But I ended up changing it in the final version because I just thought that's probably a bit too much preceding right now. And it was a bit of dialogue from Baba Yaga and I kind of got rid of that. So if it's still online, there you go. It's a bit of an Easter egg or something. But there are plans. I've written copious notes about the other sisters, and there's a reason why they're in shadow, and you can't, you know, it's very ambiguous. what the others look like. I have to give a shout out to N. Stephen Harris, who's the my collaborator on that strip. And you know, the first thing we did were to do sort of character designs for Mother Russia and Sister Disturbia. So I would definitely share those online at one point. We do have like some sketches and rough concepts, and you know, I kind of said I want to have her to have weird looking chicken feet and to be really small and wizened and just really well disturbing and a bit uncomfortable. And so we did really well on that one. And then again with Mother Russia, we wanted to look like a Red Army soldier. I think we referenced some like Russian Olympians, Soviet Olympians, very kind of stocky, squat, stocky. And then again, you see the next issue page. So her transformation is going to be very different.
Right, right. Yeah, which I can only assume is at the hands of particular individuals. From what we've read, I'm not, again, trying no spoilers here, but yeah, and Mother Russia, I mean, the minute you see her on the panel, you know exactly what she is. You know, you're talking about like that very traditional looking Russian military garb. The minute I saw her, I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely total Russian military happening right here. I actually saw the preview for Mother Russia in issue 2 before reading the book.
Oh, okay, right. And, well, actually, yeah, timing wise, yeah, it would have.
Yeah, and so like at first I saw her and I'm going, wait, she just said that's Mother Russia? So I got confused.
Okay.
And then at the end of the book, I was like, oh, I think I know where he's going, and this is going to be cool as hell. I mean, you've taken Octobriana and you've taken the stories, you know, the concepts that were written in the prose that never saw a page, and you've expanded so far and beyond and created a universe of your own with this character. It's fantastic. I absolutely love the story of where she came from, how she came to be, and then how much love and attention you've given her to create her own world. It's awesome. It's absolutely amazing to me.
Yes.
Thank you. No, it's been fun. It sounds like I'm done, but I'm not. We've still got more to come. So yeah, no, it has been a very deliberate part to kind of build a world around her, and that there is a very loose story arc of where we're going. So I think that, you know, there's a bit of dialogue in this first part where Disturbia kind of nudges Baba Yaga and says, oh, you know, but there's a thing between the two of you and Octobriana. Does she know that you're, and then Baba Yaga cuts her out. And it's preceded in Octobriana with Love. If anyone looks through the artwork, looks through the origin story, if I'm going to lead people there, and there's a little thing that Baba Yaga does, like when she uses her powers, she kind of gets like reptilian eyes. If people are willing to kind of not necessarily get a magnifying glass out, if I lead people to the origin strip, there could be some clues as where their connection may have begin from. And, you know, I think I don't want to over tease it, but I think it won't be revealed in Full Tilt Boogie. But I think the next part or next big story arc, we will kind of delve into their connection and reveal that a bit more. So I'm trying to give people a bit of, you know, breadcrumb. Along the way.
Putting seeds in for everybody to be able to find later. That's not easy to do either as a writer. It's not easy to place a seed somewhere and go, okay, I'm just going to leave this sit, and then in a year or two, somebody's going to read the next book and be like, oh, wait a minute, I remember something. That's a very difficult thing to do, especially when you're doing so much with a character, creating a storyline. You kind of want to brag about it.
And I think I can talk about it now because we're doing this 2-issue series, and there was, you know, when I was doing With Love, there was little things in there, and I thought this might not have, you know, this might be a one and done, but I didn't want to kind of shout about it too much within the strip, because if, you know, there's no payoff, it just, people feel a bit dissatisfied. But so yeah, I mean, it's the world building is being fun, and there's definitely more to come. And you know, I'm excited for people to read issue 1, but issue 2, is a zinger. We're still working on it now, but I'll be very interested to hear your reaction to the end of this particular story.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. I absolutely can't wait. I mean, this the reader's copy that was so generously sent to us. I mean, I've got Octobriana Would Love sitting in the back room, and people all the time walk past it and like, what the heck is this? Because I will also say it's sitting right next to another comic that I love to have on display because it causes people to go, what the crap is that? It sits right next to a comic book called Captain Confederacy.
Okay. Right. I can see the kind of correlation here.
Yeah. So the quick idea of Captain Confederacy, of course, you know, it's Confederate flag on them and everything, and everybody just looks at it and assumes, oh yeah, you're from the South, obviously you're, but I'm not. And the storyline has it condemns things that could have happened, that would have happened if the Confederacy continued. And just like with Octobriana, I feel like this book on its surface, people can look at it and go, oh, that's no. But then when you actually sit down and read it, it is such an amazing story. You know, the cover of Octobriana is enough to draw people in. And if you think for half a second you're going to read one thing, you're not. You're going to read an amazing strip with some amazing characters and some absolutely really fun world building behind it. How hard is it for, like, if you're out and about and you're trying to present the book, do people give you a lot of kickback on it?
Not to my face, yet.
Not to your face? Isn't that the way?
Yeah, I think I probably get that in conventions. Like, we still haven't done a US convention yet because of, you know, the pandemic. And I want to wait till we've got both issues out. So I think towards the end of the year, I'm eyeing up New York Comic Con. Could be a good one. But I imagine that's probably somewhere where I think people will be a bit more ballsy and may say something like, you call me piece of shit or whatever. And I'll be like, well, just read the book. Have a complimentary copy. I'm not encouraging anyone to give me abuse to get free comics, by the way. But nothing's been said to my face. I've had a few sort of like side eyes when we did the Montreal Comic Con for With Love. There's people like, what's this? But again, it was that kind of, you know, maybe that's good because they just stop and have a look, and then you can do an elevator pitch and go, this is what it's about. And, you know, the David Bowie thing is part of that myth, and it's compelling. And it's like, you know, he was attracted to it. You know, there's a lot to her. You know, I want to also kind of shout out to, you mentioned about the cover, and, you know, Yannick Paquette did that artwork, our lead cover, at the end of 2021. And so I've been sitting on that, you know, for well over a year. And so I got a friend of mine, a graphic designer, a friend called Nick Trent, who kind of gave it a bit more of a, you know, an exotic spin. So you've got her at an angle, and you've got like the yellow and red kind of almost Wonder Woman style background, like pop art background behind the logo. And then I think, yeah, the tagline, I was just looking at, you know, what was it?
The revolution. Comrade.
So it's obviously spinning off, you know, the revolution won't be televised, and, you know, the whole ethos behind that is like, you know, you need to get out there and fight, you know, don't be passive. So I think, you know, culturally today, I think it's all about live streaming and YouTube. So it was kind of like, it's probably not very subtle, but it kind of sounded a bit punchy. And again, that's probably my PR and marketing kind of background coming into that. But I wanted it to kind of pop on the shelves. So very much looking at, you know, not every comic store has the luxury of having a full cover on the shelf. Sometimes they're kind of hidden at angles, so you might just get the top third or, you know, the left side. So, you know, I've actually kind of looked at it of how would it look on the shelf that way, because you know, that's part of the thing, is just standing out on the shelf and getting people to just pick it up.
Oh yeah, and it will definitely stand out. That cover is gorgeous.
When people look side-eyed and stuff, I mean, I know there's a lot of things going on, but there's a power to the character, because I said the last time you were on, there was a magazine called Smash Hits, and they had an article about Billy Idol's tattoo, just one page, little tiny bit, and that fascinated me. And I was on in the Navy, and a guy on my ship read the magazine. He came, did you read this? You know, I said, yeah. And he was giving me a thumbs up, like,
yeah, yeah.
There was a power to it. And then when you find out later, when you first sent us, when Bonnie sent us October in with Love and said, you want to come on? I turned into an 8-year-old schoolgirl, you know, getting ready to see the Bay City Rollers. I was like, and this, you know, I know that's an odd band to say, but
it's a deep cut. You know,
like that. But I was a band little girls liked and nobody else. But I was thrilled. And then as I was reading your openness, I remember this character, you know. And then when you said it was all a pack of lies, I asked you how you felt when you learned. You said you were gutted.
Yeah.
That was an understatement. I felt that way too. And I'm finding this all out within an hour. But there's a power to her. It's a strong image. And there's a lot of, you know, we were putting the post together for your last episode. There's a lot of stuff out there by other people. There's another comic. There's yours. One of the guys, he's not on the show right now, but he was reading The Adventures of Luther Arkwright, which she's in there.
That's how I, you know, first encountered her was through that originally.
There's a power to her that's greater, you know, she's greater than the parts. You know, the whole is greater than the parts. She's,
yeah.
So when you say people looking side-eyed, now, I mean, again, as I said, the world we're living in now, you don't really know exactly what people are thinking, but I think part of it is interest. It's different. There's a lot more to her than what you're thinking, and I think people kind of see that, even if they don't really understand what it is.
Sure. No, absolutely. And I think, let's go back to what I said earlier, really, like, you know, what she represents is open to interpretation.
Right.
All said and done, what we're doing with this is we want to have like a kind of over the top action adventure strip with this slightly deranged immortal Amazon who can, you know, travel through time. And again, actually something I want to do with the character is kind of make her a little bit scary. Like she's very, you know, over the top friendly, and but she is like slightly psychotic. Like there is that flipping bit of dialogue where she's talking about, Lucretius, can we do this mission without actually killing anyone this time?
I know. Yes.
So you know, so there is that where it's kind of, it's quite difficult to write because you kind of, it's a bit like the Punisher, I guess, where there is that kind of, they are the hero, I guess, but it is kind of like you don't really want to go around like emulating what they do because it's slightly deranged. So there is that kind of struggle that Lucretia has as well of being within this group who are trying to do good, but how they do it is probably not what many people, I would like to think, is it will be acceptable.
Yeah. Well, and Lucretia being the newest member of the group, trying to find balance and placement and everything, and trying to be like almost like a voice of reason, the consciousness,
yes,
in a way, to make that to ask her, can we just try and not kill everybody this time?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Octavianna yelling at the guys, you know, knock it off. I'm trying to not kill you.
Yeah. I think tonally it was a challenge because I think we deliberately started with so Lucy James. It's her comic writing debut. Lucy's really well known as a sort of host and writer and presenter for like the GameSpot and Giant Bomb sort of video game entertainment channels. Her strips, I loved it when she pitched it. It's like really tongue in cheek. You know, them diving into a VR world, but tonally it's kind of a bit of humor. It's almost like, again, it sounds really pretentious, but when you watch like sort of long form TV shows, they do that kind of episode where it's kind of like funny and humorous and then shit gets dark. So it's kind of, it's funny and humorous. You know, it's very led by Lucretia. She's the one who kind of, you know, has the, you know, the solution to the problem. And then this strip starts off okay, and it kind of, it goes a bit dark, and then the next issue, it ends dark, and then we have a kind of next strip is another debut from a writer, Tamor Hussein, where again it's very Lucretia centric, and it gives a flashback to Octavianna in the 70s as well, a different take and a very different art style. And then we do have an epilogue by Simon Fraser as well, which introduces a completely batshit concept, which I can say the name of it because it's actually in the previews. So what I will say is the most iconic images of Octavianna from the original book were this giant walrus. Mm-hmm. So I have answered the question one person might have had, was what happened to that walrus corpse? And all I'll say is we've got something called Comrade Kaiju that we're kind of figuring out. So I'll let people's imaginations go where we think we're going to go with that. But I just, it was it's going to be a fun little epilogue and a tease for what might come next.
All right. Well, that Comrade Kaiju, that's a good one.
Comrade of the K as well, just so you know.
Nice. I have to ask, in the email, it also mentions the official soundtrack and this band, Tooth Drinker, who I've never heard before.
Me neither.
Absolutely fantastic music. How did that come about?
I don't know if there's a famous phrase about like working with your friends or something, but maybe if there is, I can't remember what it is, but let's just say it was that. And so Tooth Drinker is, I don't know how they describe themselves, but they're kind of like a metal project. And Sam, who's the lead there, I know him from mutual friends, exceptional guitar player. We bonded over a love of a band called Electric Six, which I don't think it's enough love. And so he's always been on my radar. And then he did, I think during the pandemic, he put together like a rock opera based on the Resident Evil series of video games, like an ambitious project he did.
Nice.
So I heard that and I was like, that's really cool. And then I was thinking, Full Tilt Boogie's coming up. We're going to do another trailer, animated trailer to kind of launch it. Wouldn't it be fun to have like an original theme? And again, it links back to the original book where, again, it's prose. Poetry is probably stretching it, but basically it was called Octobiana Song, and it was a very long-winded prose thing that clearly Sadecki had written, even though he claimed that this underground group had. It was obviously him. So we adapted that into a six-page strip in Octobiana with Love, Octobiana Song. So I thought it'd be fun to do, Octobiana Song 2023, but make it heavy metal. So it was literally just that. I spoke to Sam, messaged him on Facebook and, sent him with love and said, look, do you want to do like the official song? And also we were doing playlists for the comic where myself, Lucy and Tamor, who are like the three writers on the series, we put together a Spotify playlist, the official soundtrack, official in brackets. and then, we've got an original song on it. And so that's how that came about. He put together some lyrics after I'd sent him the comic and sent him scripts for both issues because they weren't complete then. The process, what did I get? I think I got the riff first and then I got a version of him overlaying the vocals, him singing the vocals. And then he brought in vocalist Ellie, who absolutely smashed it.
Yes.
And then it was, then it went into production, production level stuff I don't really know about, but it was, doing the volume levels and the mixing, that's the word I was looking for. And it just, it's like a genuine, absolute class heavy metal banger.
Yeah, it really is. It's got this amazing kind of like rock, metal, punk, industrial sound to it, which is everything inside of my musical wheelhouse.
Yeah,
it wasn't typical metal. I mean, I loved it, but anybody listening, this will be a link on the blog. You can go to Spotify, and I also found it on YouTube. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think musically, probably Sam's like inspirations. Like for me, it reminded me a bit of like Iron Maiden in the 80s, that kind of more progressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. So, and it worked really well. And it's called You'll See Red, Octobiana's song or love song, I think. No, actually, we went for song. I think Sam wanted to call it love song. And I said, well, maybe we'll do that for the next one.
absolutely love that. I mean, I spent the day in my office annoying anybody who came in because I was listening to that and in my free time reading the book over again. And one guy walks in and he looks at me and goes, what are you listening to now? And I'm like, just go away. Just go away. You don't like this music. I don't care what you have or your opinion is. Go away.
No, that's it. I mean, I think the playlist, you know, I love music and it does inspire what I do. And, you know, the tracks I picked for our, you know, official playlist were ones that kind of inspired the writing, or I was happy to be listening to a lot around there, or I felt, you know, thematically felt linked to the strip. And again, same with Lucy for hers, and Tamor with his selections as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if we were doing a movie, this is the kind of album.
Yeah.
Again, it's pretentious. Like, I'm no Trent Reznor, but, you know, it is that kind of like, you know, when he puts together soundtracks.
No, this is adding another layer onto something that is already awesome. Adding in a musical soundtrack. It's actually something I do subconsciously while reading series.
Right.
Just for an example, the series Lock and Key, I was listening to a musician called Cry Wolf a lot at that point in time. I can't read that book or listen to his music without thinking of one or the other anymore.
Right, yeah. Well, I listen to music when I read comics as well, or, you know, play board games. You've got to have, like, a soundtrack going. So, you know, it's very much part of how I work. You know, it's always music. Big music fan. Yeah, again, for people – and, again, you know, the theme is heavy metal, or it's, you know, it's loud and it's abrasive, but, like – the mix of genres on the playlist, I'm sure there's going to be something that people will like or may not have heard of. There's some, like, known bands and some deep cuts, really. So,
yeah. And speaking of music, of course, we get some Billy Idol tie-in in this issue as well. Which,
yes.
I was looking for it. I was genuinely looking for it.
Oh, that's, I wrote that for you. We got Lucy to write that for you, but that's not true. But
well, thank you. I appreciate it. And yes, I found it.
Well, speaking of Billy Idol, I've never seen him live, much to my eternal regret. But I've actually bought tickets to see him in Vegas in October. And I'm kind of, there's a part of me that thinks, like, can we try and wangle like a VIP? Can I just take up some books and just, like, wave him in his face? And it's just like, so I don't know if I have the ball to do that, but it's an idea that's running around my head. You know,
you have to. You know he's gonna love it. You know,
well, I mean, I think so, but there's the fear of, like, because obviously in Octopiana with Love, he appears in the strip, he helps
Connor
out. But I'm kind of like, look at this, you know. Part of me thinks he'll be like, that's amazing. And there's part of me is worrying that someone might go like, do we get a cut of this? You know.
Yeah, no. You'll be here, my attorney.
Yeah. So there is that kind of like, oh, that wasn't the reaction I was expecting.
Yeah, that's a weird thing you have to worry about. But yeah, no, I don't know. I my hope is that Billy Idol was cool as hell and just was like, oh, this is amazing.
10-year-old me definitely hopes that. So
yeah. You know, we keep talking about Mother Russia, but my favorite part in the book was is something they did where they weaponized the internet and what October and his crew did to get through it. I'm trying not to give stuff away because I want you to read it, but I absolutely love that. I love
that's all Lucy. Lucy, I think she came to me with the actual title of Doxing Match as well, and it was tapping into, you know, the internet being weaponized. And it's kind of, you know, I don't want to be political, because, you know, it's kind of, you know, that always feels a bit, if you say that, people are like, oh, there's going to be no fun. It is a fun strip, and it's a bit, you know, daft and tongue-in-cheek, but it is something that happens, you know, that where certain people in power can, you know, can weaponize the internet. You know, and again, I don't want to give too much away, but what we've done is we've kind of touched on something that is maybe a bit topical, but, you know, Lucy's take on it is kind of doesn't miss out on the fun silliness of it all, really, as well.
It's a fun package, and I love at the end, I'm going to call it an infographic, but at the end it talks about Octobriana. It tells a little bit about Bowie, you know, the guy that brought him in. I love that page. As strange as it sounds, it's one of my favorite parts of the whole comic. It's a nice package, and if you have any interest in this character, this and Octobriana will love, and I will say, even not seeing it, the next one, they're nice to have, because it tells you a lot of stuff in not very many pages and not with many words. It's just,
that's just one sweet thing you did a really good job of putting in her history in a compressed form. for the readers that pick it up, so that they can understand where she came from, how she came to be, you know, which is a fascinating story. I think I droned on forever about it last time. I won't do it again, but you know, for her to be sitting in public domain for use like this, and I don't see how other people aren't doing amazing stuff with her like you are. You know, I think that you're really taking curatorship over this character and creating so much vastly more for her. You know, she's amazing. She's an amazing character, and I really hope more people get to learn about her.
I hope so. And you know, thanks, Don, for picking out the editorial page we had at the back, because that was a deliberate inclusion where it's like, this is still going to be the first issue for someone.
Yeah.
So I want to try and get some of that lore in. There'll be another one in the second issue, which hang on, I'm going to cheat and actually look at my own comic. I'm trying to think what we put in the first one there. I've gone blank on. All right. Yeah. So there'll be a bit more about the controversy, I think, and her other appearances as well. So if people want to have an idea of where she first appeared in like Western comics, there'll be a little tick off timeline on that as well. But that'd be an issue too.
Nice. It's an actual like little timeline for her.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, so obviously the book came out in 71, and then she appeared in, first time she appeared in the traditional comic strip would have been Adventures of Luther Arkwright, but that was originally serialized in a Scottish comics magazine called Near Myths. And then Valkyrie Press adapted Adventures of Luther Arkwright. So I think that was her first American comic appearance. And then she appeared on the cover. So that would be, what, 87, 88, I think? And then it turns out that, you know, when I first worked on Octobriana with my co-creator, that was the first time she ever appeared in a solo comic book. And that was in 96.
Nice.
Yeah. And so she's kind of sporadically appeared. There was a Spanish version that came out, I think, early last year. I can't remember what it was called off the top of my head, but it was Spanish language, and it was kind of looked like it was their take on like the Avengers, like Soviet Avengers. So there was like Laika, the Russian dog, I think. But my Spanish is non-existent, so I don't have a chance to read that.
So issue one is out.
Yes.
Issue two is going to hit the shelves when?
We're looking at July, and I think we've actually put a date, but that might slip. I think we put like the 10th or 12th, I think, but with experience of this issue, for some reason not turning up on shelves when it should, even though, you know, the distributor had copies in hand, but we're looking at July. It's there to order, so I'd say if anyone likes the first issue, please ask your comic store to order an issue too. Because we're not doing massive overruns on print on this one. We're just kind of keeping it manageable. And I have like a stack of variant covers that I kind of, again, pretentiously like the idea of doing reprints with really cool new covers, maybe for shows. And, you know, if we do a second print. So I say issue two's there. Please go and order it.
Yes, definitely. Trust us. You're going to love this book.
One thing I want to say, I hate variant covers. I mean, but call me a hypocrite on this. I can't make up my mind if it's the Pulse comic cover, the second one, or if it's the Michael Cho cover I like better. I keep going back to the Pulse comic, which is a strange name for a human being to have.
Oh, it's Flops. Flops. Sorry.
Oh, Flops. That's
his name's Alan. He'll probably kill me for saying that. But his artist name is Flops Comics. So, he's great. And I've worked with him on many things over the last couple of years. Actually, for my day job, I run like a video game PR agency.
Right.
He's designed our business cards, which I haven't got any to show you. But he's done them like retro bubblegum cards, which are like business cards. Like our face is done in that style. So he's got a real cult following. He's done some stuff for Image last year. He did a lot of our like promo stuff for the Kickstarter as well, like our trading cards and posters and things. So just from my side, you know, we've selling copies of the book direct to people online, of copies we've had, and the Flops version is actually super popular. You know, when people have ordered, they've ordered like multiple copies of it at a time. So, yeah.
That one right there, to me, is Octobriana. That in the original, you know, drawings of her.
Yeah.
It looks, I don't know, it looks tribal. It looks south, yeah. You know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and she does look like somebody's been fighting a long time in the Soviet Union underground. I mean,
yeah,
it says it all. The Michael Cho cover is really stylized, which I normally, that's the style I prefer. I like that. Yeah, yeah. That one is just...
Again, that was, he did that quite a while ago as well, but yeah, he's really great.
But the Flops comics, to me, that's the cover. But I mean, they're all nice. I went to his Instagram account. He's got a lot of stuff, a lot of nice work. But
yeah. Yeah, he does. He's got a lot of beautiful, beautiful pieces. And yeah, that working with so many different artists and trying to keep everybody, you know, working in one way, or at least in keeping the design similar. Mm. Have you had any issues where somebody just went off the rails with a crazy design, but you looked at it and went, okay, that's cool, I like it?
I don't know if it's crazy. I just think there's different takes on her. So I think with looking at the covers, like Yannick's one is a bit more traditional Western heroine, where she's a bit more toned. And I think you'll see with N. Stephen Harris's take on her, she's a bit more stocky. If you see the preview of issue 2 in previews, you've got Gary Erskine's take on her, and she's a, you know, a bit more Schwarzenegger like, which, you know, I kind of dig. I kind of like that. I like a bit more heft, you know, a bit more like she will break you with, yeah. You know. I think Dolph Lundgren, actually, that's kind of my thing. Dolph Lundgren with a wig and a red star. That's what I aspire to with her. But I think, you know, I just, again, because she's, you know, public domain, because it's, you know, there's no real definitive version. You know, what I say to the artist is like, this is what I think she should be like. You know, she's not glamorous, so kind of go with that. You know, she doesn't, you know, she has a monobrow, go for that. Probably doesn't shave, kind of keep that in mind, you know, just kind of, but then give me your take on her.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a bit flexible. So I guess, you know, people might nitpick and go, there's probably a bit of a continuity blip if you go from one strip to the other. But honestly, it's like, it's comics. Like, you look at Spider-Man, you look at Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man, compare it to Steve Ditko's.
Yeah.
Or John Romita's, or John Romita Jr. So it's kind of like, it's comics. You know, it's however you want to interpret them.
Well, it also adds to the larger-than-life thing of her. Like,
yeah.
Everybody sees her differently, you know, and the experiences are different. So you can't really pin her down. When I see everybody doing, I really enjoy the different versions. Yeah. And I don't know. She's been mysterious. We found out that what we loved is not true.
Again, so. Sorry for, I feel like I just like told a kid that, you know, Santa Claus doesn't exist when I told you that. I felt bad. I still feel bad. It's been over a year.
Oh no! Well, like I said, I got me, but I can't forget when I asked you how you felt, and you said I was gutted, and I could see your heart sink a couple of feet. You know, you want to believe it. I mean, and when you said people won't let go, I'm part of that group. It's just neat and mesmerizing.
Yeah,
she's such a fascinating story, and. You know, you've already teased us that, you know, with luck, everything goes well, we're getting more.
Mm.
And I'm telling everybody right now, stop the podcast, go to your shop, order the damn book, because I want more. I'm sure. And once you guys read this, everybody, I'm going to tell you, you're going to want more. This is such an amazing story. It's so much fun. You know, it could be so easy to do like a stereotypish, you know, I'm a Russian communist, you know, superhero type. You don't do any of that. You know, you expand on this character so much and create such a world for her. And I think that's the funnest part of it, is seeing how far you're going to go with this world you're creating.
That's awesome. I think, you know, yeah, I didn't want it to be like one note. I think Mother Russia is our kind of take on it. Like, Mother Russia is kind of my, if you know, what would be the kind of reductive Octobriana, and it's her spouting this, you know, when Mother Russia starts spouting her propaganda, it's kind of like, that's what some people might expect.
Yeah.
From an Octobriana comic, and it's just like her comeback of like, no.
Yeah, that's how I really saw the Mother Russia character, as like, okay, you know, all the stereotypical crap you expect that you just like on surface judge the book by, that's Mother Russia. And yeah. Octobriana is so much more story, so much more fascinating than that. You know, are you ever planning on delving deeper into her past and doing like a solid full, like, this right from zero point where she started? Have you ever thought about that?
Yes. And I think that kind of would delve a bit deeper with the Baba Yaga stuff as well. I think we have a plan, a rough plan of where we're going to go next. So to manage your expectations of when you'll see more. So we've got book two in July. Potentially we'll have something else before the end of the year, but it very much depends. It might be sort of next year again on that. We're kind of talking about maybe doing something around Halloween. And I can tell you what we're thinking of. Yeah, at the moment, we're wondering whether it's going to be an Octobriana dedicated special, whether it's going to be like a thematic horror anthology. The working title is Freak Show A Go Go. So we're not sure whether it's going to be Octobriana on the Underground Freak Show A Go Go, or, he said, teasing, Baba Yaga. And it gives us an opportunity to do, there'll be Octobriana content there, but it might be other stuff outside of that. So it kind of, if you think about the EC horror stuff, where it's an anthology, that's kind of where our heads are at the moment. So main focus is getting issue two finished. N. Stevens finishing the artwork on the lead strip now. Gary's artwork's in, it's been lettered. So once that's done, you know, we've got a couple of artists who are keen to continue, like N. Stevens, you know, up for continuing as well. So really, yeah, stay tuned. But I think, you know, Freak Show A Go Go in one form or another will be the next thing with Octobriana. So,
man, sounds awesome. So
that's an exclusive for you. There you go.
There we go. So other than going to your local comic book shop, where else can everybody go to find all of the good stuff with Octobriana and the Underground?
So for those who like digital, we find it easier because, again, you know, we haven't overprinted on this. So if it's gone, it's gone until we do a reprint. But if people want to pick it up digitally, you can go to octobrianacomic.com and there's a store page there. You can order physical copies from us direct as well. We do have some here, he said, looking at the floor. There's literally a couple of boxes, which is for all three covers. Like, again, I've kind of limited what I've got. I've only got a finite space in my apartment. So, and I still have some With Love, which if you look behind me, behind that cupboard, there's a couple of boxes of With Love still there that we're slowly going through, you know, when we start doing conventions again there. So you can get physical copies, you can get digital versions of that. I had a bit of fun putting it together for Amazon Kindle. So With Love and first issue of Full Tilt Boogie, you can read on your Kindle. And we've, when I say fun, is actually doing the whole guided view stuff, which, you know, Comixology famously championed until, you know, Amazon kind of swallowed it up and made a mess of it. Yeah. But you can do it there. I mean, their percentage cuts are quite high. So if you want to order it direct from me, I'm more than happy. but if you want to have it with the Comixology vibe, then yeah, Amazon Kindle, and you can pick that up now. And it's great in guided view. It's kind of fun. You know, you get that kind of action.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. Stu, thank you so much for coming on again. And we absolutely love this book. And I think all of our listeners will too. But until next time, everybody, read
more
comics.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.